Welcome. Welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I'm really thrilled to bring a very special show to you today. We are talking to two of the leading researchers in UFO phenomenon and abductee awareness of alien abduction. Our first guest, they both wrote a book together. They co-wrote The Alien Abduction Files, the most startling cases of human-alien contact ever reported, Kathleen Martin and Denise Stoner. And I'd like to first introduce give you a little bit of a bio on Kathleen, and then I'm going to give you a little bit of a bio of Denise, and then we're going to bring them both on the show. So Kathleen Martin works full-time as an author, alien abduction researcher, and lecturer. She has more than 23 years of experience in the field and is the niece of Betty and Barney Hill, the first abductees whose story stirred worldwide interest, which we are also going to be getting into. She has lectured at conferences across the United States and appeared in numerous TV specials as an on-air expert. She's co-author of Captured, The Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. She lives in near Orlando and can be found online at Kathleen-Martin, M-A-R-D-E-N.com. And then we have Denise Stoner, who co-wrote with Kathleen, and she's spent more than 21 years researching alien abduction phenomenon, documenting the physical and psychological impact of abduction with experiencers. She's worked one-on-one with abductees and for many years has hosted private meetings for groups and abductees. She's lectured on alien abduction phenomenon, appeared on numerous radio shows, and will appear on PBS TV this year. Also living near Orlando, she can be found at DeniseStoner.com. Welcome, ladies, Kathleen and Denise. I'm so thrilled to have both of you on the show today. Welcome.
Hello, and happy to be with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I think what we're going to do to make this work the best is I'm going to go back and forth to each one of you, okay? So the story starts, the Alien Abduction Files, which is the book the two of you co-wrote together. It started with Denise Stoner's story that Kathleen Martin, you, Kathleen, actually started to research. Is this right? Kathleen, tell me a little bit about how this happened.
Okay. Well, I had originally lived in New Hampshire, and 3.5 years ago, my husband and I retired to Florida. I should say he retired. I didn't. But we moved down here, and I had written to Denise, exchanged a few email messages before I moved down. So I knew who she was, and I was pretty impressed by her. She was at that time Florida MUFON's director of chief investigator is what it was called, and also ran meetings as a state section director for people who were interested in UFOs, and also a private meeting for experiencers. So I decided to get in touch with her and to attend some of her meetings. And I have to say that I was very impressed with Denise. She was intelligent, professional, and very well-spoken, had a great deal of knowledge about the subject of alien abduction. And eventually she invited me to her house for lunch, and we discovered that at one time we had lived only 30 miles away from each other in Colorado and might have observed the same UFO on the same day. And
oh,
so
how incredible.
We were discovering we had more and more in common. And eventually Denise confided in me that she was an experiencer herself, and she had always kept this secret. And you know, so I told her that I wouldn't tell anybody, but she had had hypnosis after she had a close encounter and missing time experience with her family in Colorado in 1982, and that was the first thing she told me about. And although she had had hypnosis, all of the tapes and files and everything was gone. The hypnotist had passed away, and there was no way she could retrieve any of it, and she couldn't remember much of what she said under hypnosis. So I volunteered to facilitate her memory. I'm a hypnotherapist with advanced training in hypnotic regression and working with experiencers and forensic hypnosis, post-traumatic stress disorder. So we started to work together. And eventually, I found out more and more and found out Denise had been an experiencer since she was 2.5 years old, as far as she could remember. And so I invited her to join me in writing her experiences in this book anonymously. And then our publisher, we received a publishing contract, and the publisher said, somebody has to step out of the closet and reveal their true identity for this book to be published. And so after much thinking and discussions and Denise contacting family and friends, and she had retired at that point, so she finally, after about a month, said, okay, I'm willing to do it. So it was a very brave decision that Denise made to do this, and one that I hope she doesn't regret.
Oh, wow. So that brings me to you, Denise. Will you please discuss with us your experience? Because that's absolutely phenomenal. And congratulations and big kudos for coming out of the closet. That's got to be scary.
Well, it is, and it was, and I decided at one point, once I had discussed everything with my family, and I knew that myself and my husband had retired, although it could still affect you, you just don't know what's going to happen, and, you know, criticism, that can happen one way or another. Whether you talk about it regarding yourself or regarding others, you're still going to be criticized. So I thought, okay, as long as my family approves, I'm going to do it. And I did. And from the time I was 2 years old, although I didn't realize at the time what was happening, I had these visitors that came and took me to a place that I didn't recognize. I wasn't mistreated. I was given some sort of, I think, lessons. I was so young and so little that until I was in my 20s, didn't realize that this was something that shouldn't be happening and didn't happen to others. But I had a little visitor that I now know was a little gray, and came and took me for years and continued on until I was in my 20s and then became, I think, a breeder. I was used in some sort of breeding program. I had missing pregnancies. I had so many things happen that are explained in the book until I saw in vials entities being grown and developed, and one that was pointed out, and I was told, this was yours, and I recognized that. I felt some sort of recognition or closeness, or I can't say bonding because that wasn't the feeling, a connection, I would say. And now on to today, I'm not sure what the purpose is. I'm being prepared for something. Could it be the future? Perhaps. I'm not sure. So that's briefly what has gone on.
Okay. Now, in regard to you saying you had a little gray that came and took you, are there different types of aliens that interact with our Earth that you found?
Kathleen can explain some of them. The ones that I interacted with was a group of small grays, a larger gray that's over 5 foot tall, and then I had one I called the doctor that was rather insectoid looking, and he performed any or all medical procedures that were done on my person.
And at any point while that was happening, were you feeling fear? Were you aware of what was going on? Were they talking to you telepathically, intuitively?
Talking to me telepathically always and getting their point across very strongly. And yes, I was fearful, but there was something that they always did, placing a hand on my forehead that stopped any fear from continuing and also pain.
Oh, wow. Okay. And did this all happen? You said it started like at 2 years old. Was there a time frame in your life, like there is an age or grouping or a time frame that you experienced more encounters or more of this than other times?
Well, when I was little, I can recognize that very time because I didn't like to be away from my family at all. My mom was in the hospital giving birth to my sister, so I can pinpoint the very day I recognized the beginning of this, and it went on for several years. During the breeding process, I was taken very often, and that went on for years, so there were spaces in between where I don't believe I was taken for periods of time. I would have to sit down and do a schedule to see when did this happen, when did it not. I haven't really taken a long look at it, but for a long time, from the time I was 2.5 through, oh gosh, perhaps late 30s, early 40s, it was, I would say, continuous. I'm not going to say once a week, twice a week, something like that, but very often.
And when you came back, were you physically drained? Was there any physical change in how you felt? Was there a difficulty in adjusting to everyday experiences in life? How did you process?
Well, I would have, at times, marks on my body. I would be physically and mentally exhausted. Even up until very, very recently, no sleeping until after 4 o'clock in the morning, because it appeared that I would be taken the majority of the time at night. It's out in a vehicle a lot of the time. But I would stay awake and sit up and not go to sleep at all, force myself to do anything to stay awake. And so that affected my life a great deal.
Okay, so when you say you left in a vehicle, are you talking about spacecraft or are you talking about automobile?
Automobile.
So you left
in
an automobile,
and you
don't know where you were taken?
Well, I knew it was a craft. I would see lights, especially that time with my husband. I would see lights. There was something over the car. I felt the car moving that one time into the desert where we wouldn't be seen and then put back on another area of road. That also happened in Florida. We were taken. We were moved. When we were put back, we had to try and figure out where we were in order to continue on with our drive. Where are we? Where do we go from here? GPS was not readily available, so you just had to look around and see how to continue and figure out, okay, what time is it? Has the time changed? All of those types of things. So it's a very, very odd thing that happens to you.
Okay. Now I'm going to move back to Kathleen. Kathleen, mm-hmm. in regard to what Denise was just explaining, that she had encountered small grays, have you found different types of alien beings interacting on Earth with us?
Yes, absolutely. In addition to the small grays who are the workers and the guards, there are also the taller grays who are about 5 feet tall. And those are the physicians and the educators and the scientists. People also report encountering hybrids in various stages of development, part human, part gray. In appearance, people also, such as Denise, report an insectoid type of being, and this is fairly prevalent. It just looks like a big bug and is very, very thin, maybe about 6 feet tall or taller. And thin limbs, and gosh, by all appearances, is an insect. Many people call it an insectoid. There are reptilian types that are also reported, particularly in the Midwest and the West, more so than on the East Coast. I'm finding. And they can be rather frightening. Some people report that they are not very nice, whereas other people have reported that they're very nice and friendly. Also, there are Nordic types who look very human, generally blonde or light brown hair, very attractive looking. And many people out on the West Coast as well report that they've interacted with this type throughout their lifetime. I've received a few reports of bluish beings or blue-colored beings, and a few reports of small, hairy beings. And, you know, sometimes a very tiny, tiny percentage will talk about tall whites or tall golden. So I've received reports about all of those different types.
So basically, we have interaction with many different galactic beings. I mean, what it sounds like is that there's a lot of visitation.
Well, that is what people are reporting, but I'll have to tell you that the vast majority are reporting interaction with the grays and with the insectoids.
And it really seems to come in as a place of fear when people do not see something that looks like them. So the fear factor comes in a lot of times with just the visual acceptance or lack of acceptance, or, you know, it kind of is a triggering. You see something that looks a little alien, that looks a little like an insect, you're going to be a little freaked out. And I would think that that's a kind of a common first impression. Now,
yes, absolutely.
Were you scared, Denise, when that when you saw that being?
Yes, naturally afraid each and every time, even though it was the same one every time all through my life, and I knew them.
Okay.
I knew who this was. Yes. Yeah.
Now, Kathleen, talk to us a little bit about the first abductee story, which actually were your aunt and uncle, Betty and Barney.
That is true. And it dates back to September 19, 1961, when my aunt and uncle, who were politically involved in the state of New Hampshire and had absolutely no knowledge about UFOs, were traveling through the White Mountains of New Hampshire and had a close encounter with a UFO that followed them, that paced their car, that actually hovered only 100 feet above their vehicle. My uncle got out of the car with binoculars and looked up at this craft and observed non-human entities looking back at him. It's all part of the original reports, and it's all of those reports are in my book with Stanton Friedman, Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. The entire investigation that we and others did is in that book. Barney felt that he was going to be captured as that craft started to descend closer to him. He felt frozen. He felt as if he wasn't going to be able to move, but Barney was a very brave man, and he had served in the Army during World War II, honorably discharged, and a civil rights leader in the state of New Hampshire. He managed to break away and run back to the car, screaming to Betty that they had to get out of there or they were going to be captured. The craft then changed position and was hovering right over the top of their car. Betty and Barney heard a series of buzzing sounds, and they were code-like, and they seemed to be bouncing off the trunk of their vehicle. They felt this vibration pass through the car, and a tingling sensation passed through their bodies. The next thing they knew, they were 35 miles south on the same highway. They had a vague memory of being on a different road than this main highway. They didn't know how they got there. They had a vague memory of observing a fiery orb on the ground and also a roadblock. And that was about all they could remember at that time. They just heard another series of these buzzing sounds, and they didn't see the craft that time, and they drove home, and there were some very strange things. Remember I told you about the buzzing sound striking the trunk of the car? There was
right.
a very strong magnetic field back there on the trunk of that car and some shiny circles where the sounds were being made. Betty's
wow.
dress that had been in fine shape when she'd put it on the morning of the 19th was torn in several areas. Even at the top of her zipper, at the back of her dress, there was a 2-inch tear and a 1-inch tear in the thick zipper fabric. The lining of her dress was torn from waist to hemline, and the hem was torn down on one side. Under hypnosis, later, she remembered how that occurred, and she had attempted to struggle to get away from these grays that had abducted her and my Uncle Barney, and she had actually kicked one and tore down the hem and tore the lining out when she did that. They also didn't know how to operate a zipper, so when they removed her dress in order to extract ova from her navel through a long needle, they had torn the zipper on her dress. There was a pink powdery substance that later grew on that. They've been trying to analyze it. It's been through analysis in 5 separate laboratories, and no one has been able to identify what caused the damage to her dress and for that pink powder to grow. The tops of my uncle's shoes were so deeply scraped he had to buy new shoes. And Betty and Barney, particularly Barney, started to experience trauma because he had conscious, continuous recall of observing those non-entities and feeling like he was going to be captured and realizing that there were 2 hours missing time that they couldn't
wow.
account for, plus all of those other memories. And they ended up with Dr. Benjamin Simon, a renowned psychiatrist in Boston, who saw them for a period of 6 months every Saturday, hypnotized them separately, and sure enough, they recalled this, you know, very, very similar experiences of being abducted and taken aboard a UFO for physical examinations, just like Denise had, and many thousands of other experiencers today have had.
That is phenomenal. Now, where do you find most of the alien abduction calls coming from in the United States? Is there a specific area? You were saying earlier that many are seeing a specific Nordic type in the western part of the United States. But are there areas that are more predominant for alien UFO sightings than others?
I can't say that there are. I mean, I receive calls from all over the United States, from Canada, from the UK, and from Australia as well. And I'm the Mutual UFO Network's Director of Abduction Research. So many, many people contact MUFON and file formal abduction reports as well at www.mufon.com or write to me through email. You can get my email address on my website at kathleen-marden.com.
Now, with all of the hush-hush that has gone on for so many decades in regard to aliens and alien encounters, we're starting to see where open-mindedness is becoming more prevalent, where even governments, even our own government, even the Vatican, is becoming much more open to discussion about other alien encounters or aliens existing. Do you feel that this is opening up a doorway for more of possibly a shift in our consciousness and awareness when it comes to aliens?
Well, I certainly hope that it is because, you know, it's time for the government to fess up, and they have to be aware that thousands of people are being taken. These incredible people, there's physical evidence that this is happening. There's not a lot of kooks who are having sleep paralysis and are fantasy prone. It's credible people, people without psychiatric problems. They hold down sometimes very important jobs, and they can't tell anybody that this happened, or they might come to someone like me or someone like Denise. But it's really time for the government to come clean about this. I doubt that they will, though. How is the government going to say people in this country are being abducted by aliens? And sorry, folks, there's nothing that we can do. We can't stop it. Our military cannot fight this off. We're helpless. The only thing they could do is to assure us that we're not being harmed, and we're not, and that just acknowledge that this is occurring, that there are UFO sightings all over the world, physical trace evidence, landings, nuclear power plants have been shut down by these ETs, and, it's going on. It's time to state that it is, and they're friendly. They're not here to harm us.
And it's been going on a lot longer than the 200 plus years the United States has existed as a country, because we have ancient sightings and ancient pyramids and ancient awareness and ancient insight that these intelligent beings have interacted with us for thousands of years, if not forever. And I personally want to see some sort of insight coming out in regard to, these angelic encounters that we have read about in the Bible for thousands of years. Are they possibly beings that also are called aliens? And maybe we should start to bring another word in as a definitive subject instead of categorizing everything as alien, because it really does conjure up such a negative connotation when you talk about intelligent life force that exists and that has been seen and readied here on this planet, and we're creating separatism by calling it something that conjures up kind of a little bit of fear. And I'd like to bring, a little bit of calm to this subject. I love the fact that you ladies are working in this domain and that you're bringing intelligent research to it and that you're bringing credible evidence that brings people to an awareness of accepting it and not being fearful of it. So thank you very much for the work that you do.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us. Mm-hmm.
Very important to us, and thanks for having us.
Oh, Kathleen and Denise, thank you so much for being on the show today on Limited Realities. And let me bring the audience back to you guys and your websites. We have the book is called The Alien Abduction Files, The Most Startling Cases of Human-Alien Contact Ever Reported, written by Kathleen Marden and Denise Stoner. And for Kathleen, you can contact Kathleen Marden at kathleen-marden.com. I'm going to spell it out for you. KathleenMarden.com. And Denise Stoner is DeniseMstoner.com. Ladies, thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities. It is very powerful work that you're doing. Thank you so much for doing it. God bless your work, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wasn't that an incredible experience to talk to these women? They've been doing this for over two decades, and I find this kind of work absolutely fascinating. You know, abductee is quite a controversial subject when you're talking about aliens. And so it's something that, with an open mind, to understand that there are people walking around who have these experiences that they fear being judged by. And so I have empathy for these folks. And without further ado, I kind of created a little bit of a mishmash show today. We have aliens in our first half hour, and we have a menopause in our second half hour. And I created that dual aspect kind of with a tongue-in-cheek, because when women are going through a shift in their lives, and especially hormonally, it's not something that's readily talked about in mainstream topic. In fact, menopause has gotten such a bad rap, and women kind of are shunned in many aspects because all of a sudden youth is not something that's readily available. However, menopause doesn't have to be this dreaded phase of life for women. And with that, we have our wonderful genius nutritionist, dietitian, Terry Cochran. Absolutely love this woman. She is so full of wisdom and insight and knowledge. She's going to bring us through the maze of menopause, and she's going to let us realize what it is we're going through hormonally and how we can actually shift the hormones from imbalance to balance. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on my favorite dietitian and nutritionist, which actually I like to think of her as an alternative physician because she's so well-versed. Terry Cochran. Terry, welcome. Thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for having me back again.
Of course.
You know, when we do go through menopause, I mean, sometimes we do feel like we're being abducted by aliens
yes.
in our body. So there is that very much commonality. So you weren't that disparate in your subject matters.
I know. I was a little annoyingly tongue in cheek because I do see that correlation, and I actually had somebody comment on that on Facebook that she felt like an alien when she was going through menopause. So I feel that's such a hysterical aspect because, you know, hey, let's flow with it. So here we are, Terry. We're talking about menopause, and you know, menopause is often talked about more than what men go through in andropause, but it's a physical shift. It's an emotional, it's a hormonal, it's felt on so many different levels, and it can happen at many different times in a woman's life. I mean, there's early menopause when women can go through it actually in their, you know, mid to late 30s, and then there's late menopause. My mother didn't go through hers till she was like 60. So it's like here we are in this gamut of shift of womanhood, and I want to hand you the gauntlet and go at it, girl.
Well, thank you. Well, you're right. There is a wide range of times in our life when we can enter the menopausal years. And just to define menopause occurs when the female hormones drop below a critical level, which is needed to produce the normal cycle of ovulation and menstruation. And that typically means you are in menopause when you have had 12 consecutive months of no period. So that's the clinical definition of menopause. I talk about this a lot, and I call this segment dancing through menopause because it really, we do need to be in the flow of what is happening with our bodies, but in order to do that, we need to understand what actually is happening in our bodies. And as you stated, you know, there is early menopause, and we enter the perimenopausal years between the ages of 35 and 55. So we can actually be in perimenopause for 20 years. Now, the bell curve tells us, I know that's really scary.
Yeah.
The bell curve tells us that menopause usually falls between the ages of 48 and 52. But hormones can really start fluctuating and can continue for years before you actually have your last period. And so why is that? Well, it's not just about the ovaries. Yes, we produce a finite number of eggs, and once those eggs have been released, we have no more eggs to be formed, and we are in menopause. But we can't just look at our ovaries. We really have to look at other organs within the endocrine system and then our clearing organs, because if those are balanced, then the menopausal symptoms will be minimized. If they are not, then menopause can be a very difficult dance. And so one of the things that I always look at in my practice is I always look to the adrenals as well as the thyroid. And the adrenals, I always tell my perimenopausal and menopausal clients, we have to love and nurture our adrenals during menopause. Why is that so important? It's so important because the adrenals take over the role of the ovaries when we enter menopause, producing the estrogen, testosterone, DHEA, progesterone that were produced by the ovaries initially. And so if those adrenals are under-supported, we are not going to have those secondary hormones being produced that will allow us not to feel menopausal. And adrenals are critically important. They physically sit atop of our kidneys. So, you know, I recommend to women 15 to 20 minutes of heat on the adrenals 2 or 3 times a week to help stimulate that adrenal function. But beyond the estrogen and progesterone and the testosterone and DHEA, they help to manage glucose metabolism. They help manage inflammation in our bodies. They support electrolyte balance along with the kidneys. They help regulate blood pressure, blood sugar, immune system function, and the very important hormone of cortisol. And so why is cortisol so important in menopause? Well, if we are cortisol balanced during menopause, then if your estrogen levels are high or low, you're likely not to have a hot flash.
Okay.
However, if cortisol levels are high, a drop in estrogen levels will trigger a flash. And
wow.
I don't know if your listeners have experienced this, but a lot of my clients and myself included will flash when we're stressed.
Okay.
That's typically my signal that I need to love my adrenals. If I'm flashing when I'm stressed, it's my body telling me, okay, time to re-engage that parasympathetic nervous system and get out of the fight or flight.
Okay.
So cortisol is really, really important. And so for someone who's having hot flashes, adding estrogen may not be the answer because it may not be your estrogen at all. It could be
okay.
your adrenals. And in
wow.
fact, you might have too much estrogen circulating through your body and then giving you more estrogen then creates a very bad environment for cell mutation down the road. So how do we get out of balance in our adrenals? Well, stress, caffeine, and alcohol all deplete adrenal function. And how do we know when we are getting to that adrenal fatigue stage, which is a term of art in the alternative medical community? We get tired between 2 and 4 in the afternoon, and then we can't stay awake, asleep between 2 and 4 a.m. So if you're popping up in the middle of the night, if you're consistently popping up between 2 and 4 a.m., that's a really good indicator that your adrenals are out of balance. You also have increased sensitivity.
Yep. I'm diagnosing myself as you speak, so go ahead.
we also have, you know, in that we get irritable. We have higher cravings for foods that are high in salt and fat, and we tend to have a little bit more allergy sensitivity. And then a really big indicator is we get to gain our weight around the midsection. And so when we're chronically overworking our adrenals, not only are we increasing cortisol, what happens then is we reduce DHEA, which is called the anti-aging hormone. Typically, cortisol and DHEA are inversely proportional, meaning that when cortisol is up, DHEA is going to be suppressed.
Okay.
And so we really have to look at that. And cortisol is so insidious because it actually creates tissue resistance to the thyroid. So that's the next gland we're going to talk about. So our thyroid is our major metabolic organ. That's the one that regulates body temperature in relationship with the hypothalamus. It helps us to burn our calories. It helps us to maintain body temperature. It works with the kidneys so we don't have an erratic heart rate. It helps us to be clear-headed. It is an indicator of depression as well. So according to the Thyroid Foundation of America, over 11 million women have a malfunctioning thyroid, but not all of those have been clinically diagnosed as hypothyroid or hyperthyroid. And so just because your thyroid numbers are normal, your TSH is normal, within normal range, doesn't mean that your thyroid is working optimally. And I have so many women that come into my office telling me, I'm tired, my nails are brittle, my hair is falling out, I can't lose weight, and yet my thyroid numbers are normal, so my doctor is telling me it's not my thyroid. Well,
right.
It could be your thyroid, because as we enter menopause again, if our adrenals are dysregulated and we have high cortisol, cortisol creates tissue resistance to the thyroid, as does estrogen. So what happens is both of these hormones, cortisol and estrogen, don't allow the hormones that we're making, the thyroid hormones that we're making, to be entered into the cell. So you could be making all these great thyroid hormones, but you're not using them.
Right.
And,
okay.
And so you have now subclinical hypothyroidism. And so we've got to look at that. So thyroid and adrenals are critically important. It's the three-legged stool in menopause. We have to look at those hormones, those glands, and regulate them.
Okay,
so how do we
regulate? It would be your adrenal, your thyroid, and what's the third one?
Well, the third one is the ovaries. The ovaries are
okay.
What, you know, started this dance in the first place. We ran out of our little legs.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so we have to look at them together. But again, sometimes the answer is not more estrogen or even more progesterone. Now, I will say that during menopause, estrogen falls by 40 to 60% to our premenopausal numbers. However, progesterone can drop to zero. And so even though our absolute estrogen numbers can be much lower, if you don't look at estrogen in relationship to progesterone and you just look at your absolute estrogen numbers and say, oh, they're low, let's support with estrogen, you could be supporting an estrogen-dominant situation. And so you've got to look at the ratio of estrogen to progesterone. The best way to do that is to have a salivary test. I love saliva tests for all our female hormones, for that cortisol, for the estrogen, for the progesterone, for the DHEA. We need to know our baseline. I really recommend women over 35 have an annual or a biannual salivary test. But you can get baseline numbers, and you can see how those numbers are shifting year over year or every other year.
Now, who performs a salivary test? Because I'm sure that a typical MD would not be open to that. Is that true?
Yes, not all MDs are open to them. Luckily, a lot of the doctors that I work with here in the DC area that are trained in functional medicine, and they are MDs, do salivary tests. I do salivary tests in my practice. ZRT Labs is one of the top in the country for salivary tests. So if you're GP or OBG does not know about them, educate them and say, I would like this test, please.
Wow, okay.
It's really important.
Okay.
It's really, really important because it gives us such a complete picture.
Right, right.
Estrogen is
okay.
Not always the answer for menopause. And then another thing we have to look at is our insulin level. Insulin, what it does is when we have increased insulin levels, in large part because we're pushing too much cortisol, which is a sugar, in our bloodstream, increased estrogen increased insulin increases unbound estrogen. So the more insulin we have, the more unbound estrogen we're going to have. That leads to weight gain, and then the whole irony is the more fatty tissue we hold, the more estrogen we are holding. So insulin is going to make us heavier, which is going to create more fatty tissue, which is going to create more estrogen, because we hold estrogen in our fatty tissue.
Okay.
So looking at those three, the adrenals, the thyroid, and the ovaries together, and estrogen, is critically important. So what do we do to support adrenal function? Well, astragalus is a phenomenal herb. It's an adrenal adaptogen, which means that it helps regulate adrenal function whether you are high cortisol or low cortisol. Another great herb is rhodiola, fantastic for regulating adrenal function. If you are really, really depleted and your cortisol levels are flatlining, that you will know from your test, then adrenal glandulars will come to the rescue and help restore that adrenal function. another thing that's really critical for adrenal function is really watching the carbs. You've got to be really mindful during menopause. We know we can't eat the way we used to when we were 20, but carbs are critical because of the insulin response and therefore the estrogen creation, and also insulin and carbs because of the cortisol component will affect that tissue resistance to the thyroid. So I've had many clients that come to me and say, I'm on a 700-calorie-a-day diet, which is really unhealthy. But when we dissect their diet, it's carb-heavy. And so I put them on a 1,500-calorie-a-day diet, and they lose 4 pounds a month. So we really have to – yes, it's very dramatic. You can eat three times the amount of food and lose weight if you are doing the right things. And following what I call the protein buddy system, always having a protein with a fruit or a grain and really minimizing your grains to quinoa, buckwheat, which are actually seeds that act like grains, some brown rice, oatmeal if you don't have a gluten sensitivity. Even though oats are technically not glutinous, I put them in that umbrella because they're primarily inflammatory. But white rice and corn and white potatoes really don't have a lot of room in your pantry or your refrigerator if you are trying to manage that middle section bulge that we tend to get during menopause. So that's critically important. And then how do we support our thyroid? Well, selenium is a key mineral for that, as is zinc and iodine. And so the best sources of selenium are, as is iodine, are in seafood. A fruit that has a tremendous amount of iodine is mango. And then chromium, which is a mineral that helps manage blood sugar, so there we go to the insulin, but it also helps with fat metabolism and then therefore is thyroid protective. So those minerals and vitamins and herbs really should be in our arsenal of when we are dancing through menopause. It will help support those organs and those hormones that may be dysregulated. But again, we have to look at where are we. Let's get some baseline information.
Right.
And then,
now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to make a note in regard to thyroid because I have hypothyroidism, and they always say, "Oh, you don't look like you have hypothyroidism," because I'm a little anal about, you know, how healthy I eat, and I don't eat always what I want to eat. But thyroid recently has adjusted its barometer in regard to what's a healthy thyroid, and it actually has started to include more people, more women who normally in the past were told, oh, your thyroid's fine. Now they're kind of on that cusp of where your thyroid could be a little bit off, and that's why your hair is falling out and your skin is itchy and you feel like crap. So, you know, thyroid... I just want to make that mention because I spoke to my doctor recently about it, that if you had your thyroid checked a year or two ago and they told you it was normal and you still have those symptoms, please go back and have it rechecked because the chances are the levels are different now. And are you aware that is happening more frequently with women, that they're coming in now and they're saying, my thyroid's off?
Yes. And, you know, the thing is that we need to look at the full thyroid panel, including the thyroid-binding globulin. The TBG is very important, as well as reverse T3. And I will say that the range for a normal thyroid-stimulating hormone is like 0.9 to 4.5. I don't like to see it above 2. If you're above 2, if your TSH is above 2, you're telling me on some level you're subclinical hypothyroid. Another great way to tell is take your basal temperature when you're not ovulating. If you're below 97.8, you are subclinical hypothyroid. So basal temperature is a really good indicator of that. And then symptoms. You know, of course, if your hair is brittle and dry, if your nails are not growing, if you are itchy and dry, like you said, if you're fatigued, if you wake up and you're tired, you've got to look at it symptomatically. And there are Biotics Research, which is a wonderful line of products, has a thyroid glandular that contains both T3 and T4. T3 is the active form of thyroid, and T4 has to be converted to T3. And this is something that with my thyroid clients, even if they're doing prescription, I recommend Nature Throid because it has both of the T3 and the T4 component. But Biotics Research is one that is available without a prescription. Now, I'm not suggesting that everybody go out there and buy some thyroid glandulars just willy-nilly. You need to really understand your body first. But those have worked very effectively in my practice with women that are subclinical but are symptomatic. And when we look at their entire picture, yes, thyroid is one of those components.
Okay. Now, in regard to what we can do, I think I interrupted something. You were going off into a different direction. I brought you back to thyroid, so I'm going to be quiet now.
No, that's no problem. There's so much to say about this topic.
There really is.
And it's so important that women be informed. The next
right.
thing that we really have to look at is our clearing organs. Liver is so central to how we manage our shifting hormones. So women will say to me, I'm in menopause and I have acne again. Well, how is that possible? Well, it's possible because your hormones are shifting and your liver can't clear those shifting hormones. So now we've added a fourth leg to this stool, and we've got to look at the liver. Because liver is the only organ that can convert a fat-soluble to a water-soluble, and that is hormones. Hormones are fat-soluble. They have to be converted and excreted through the liver. And we can, if the liver is congested, become, again, estrogen dominant by something called enterohepatic recirculation. The layman's term is, I call it the estrogen spin cycle. Estrogen keeps being spun from the GI tract to the liver and then back to the GI tract, and it just keeps being used over and over again because the liver was not working optimally to allow that conversion and dismantling of estrogen to occur. So what are things that we need to help support the liver so that estrogen can be easily excreted as these hormones start shifting? Well, the cruciferous vegetables. And again, in my book, I am such a cruciferous vegetable girl because of its amazing properties, the cabbage, collards, broccoli, bok choy, watercress, arugula, kale. Those break down estrogen. They help with estrogen metabolism. They also help with phase one, phase two liver detoxification, which we need in order to activate sulfation and methylation pathways that really are the two pathways that dismantle estrogen.
Wow.
We also need avocado. Avocado is a great estrogen metabolizer. The greens of chlorophyll through alfalfa or chlorella or cilantro or parsley, anything that's deep green and leafy will help support liver clearing, as well as beets. Beets are a liver purifier. So we really need to look to our vegetable family for helping support liver clearing. And if our liver is clear, it's going to be a lot less dramatic of a shift when we start advance through menopause. It's going to really help us move through these hormones that are shifting with much greater ease. Now, again, looking at the entire picture, we've got to look at those adrenals, we've got to look at the thyroid, we've got to look at the insulin levels, but we also can't forget our liver.
Right. Now, is the liver always involved with menopause, or is it involved with half of the women or some of the women?
It's involved with all of the women because, as it is involved with all of the men going through andropause. Just as a little segue, I know that there's a big scare now saying that essential fatty acids have increased the rate of prostate cancer. My whole take on that is if your liver isn't clear and you're feeding it a lot of fat that the liver can't convert, then you're going to be circulating too much testosterone as a man. Because that testosterone can't be broken down. Right.
So, again, you have to clear the liver.
Again, you got to clear the liver. So it's for everybody. And, you know, even when you're going through puberty, if you're going through puberty and you have a tremendous amount of acne, you've got to look to the liver.
Okay.
Because that's the way that we're going to clear these hormones that in puberty are really raging. So liver is for everyone.
Now, with clearing the liver, you were talking about cruciferous vegetables, and what else can we do that's easy to clear the liver on a daily level?
Well, I mean, I personally juice every morning. I juice with cilantro and cucumber.
Okay.
It's a great, easy juice. Or if you don't have a juicer, just put some cilantro and cucumber in some water and let that water sit and drink it. You know, again, caffeine is tough on the liver. Alcohol is not, I'm not against alcohol, but, you know, if we tax the liver too much with alcohol, that could be a problem. So
right.
Milk thistle
okay.
is the king of liver tonics. It is an herb. If you're not otherwise sensitive to chrysanthemums, milk thistle is a phenomenal liver tonic. So that is highly recommended for just keeping the liver happy, you know, whether you're going through menopause or not. And then again, you know, not overtaxing it with fats. Now, I love fats, but the good fats, the coconut fat, the olive oil, the avocado, the nuts, those are good fats and actually help make the good cholesterol. But the bad fats, like the trans fats and the saturated fats that come in packaged goods, not all saturated fats are bad, but the saturated fats that come in packaged goods and the hydrogenated fats, those are the ones we want to stay away from.
Okay. Okay. Now, what is the benefit of flaxseed in regard to menopause and hot flashes?
Okay, so flaxseed is a wonderful phytoestrogen, and the studies have been done that the phytoestrogens are very protective, and so it's going to give you an estrogenic effect without overwhelming your estrogen, and that's a really good question, Lisa. I personally, the way I have gotten through menopause, because I am not estrogen dominant, is using flaxseed oil every day. Flaxseed oil really helps me, and the great thing about flaxseed oil is not only is it a phytoestrogen, which is the good guy estrogen, but it is a wonderful emollient for the skin. It's also very high in omega-3s, which are anti-inflammatory. So it's going to give you that soft skin. It's going to give you that little bit of estrogen if you're not otherwise estrogen dominant. With my clients that are estrogen dominant, I even remove flaxseed from their protocol for a while. Now flaxseeds themselves are fine, but therapeutic doses of flaxseed if you're taking it in oil. Too much for them to handle. So flaxseed isn't for everyone, but for those that don't have true estrogen dominance, it's a really beneficial oil and phytoestrogen to help manage the hot flashes and the other symptoms of menopause.
And so when we start to get our adrenals in balance and we start to get our liver where it's functioning and allowing for that detoxification to happen, which the liver naturally is, that's its role, Will we start to see changes in us where we're actually processing that change, or when we go through that change, or when we get to that point, that it's easier for us? Will it be?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So are hot flashes inevitable? Does everyone get hot flashes? Can you stop hot flashes by using some of these alternative approaches that you suggested? Or is it like a genetic piece? If your mother got hot flashes, you're going to get hot flashes?
Well, what they say is our well-being is only 15% genetic. 85% is everything else.
Okay.
So just because our mom did or did not have hot flashes means that we will go down the same path. Now, I will say not everyone gets hot flashes. The majority of women do, and especially if you're a woman that is, you know, very busy in her life, and if we all have the opportunity to meditate and practice mindfulness and be present in every hour of our day, I would expect that very few of us would go through significant symptoms of menopause. But the reality of it is we live in a very fast-paced world. We're multitasking. We have many hats to wear every day. And so the best thing we can do is support those systems in a way that's going to allow us to minimize what would be the bridge of menopause entering into wise womanhood, as I call it. But, you know, just because we're going through menopause, and I'm postmenopausal, I'm on the other side of it, doesn't mean that we have to give in to that someone's reality of, well, you're just going to be you know, you're beyond your prime. Your
right.
weight is not going to be the same. You're not going to be as sexy or interesting. I say no to all of those. We are wiser. We are stronger.
Right.
We are smarter. And we can be as sexy or sexier as a 50,
Amen.
60, 70 than we were in our 30s. My mother is turning 80. I just posted a picture
I know.
Of her on Facebook.
Oh, my God.
It's
She's
phenomenal.
Amazing. And you're amazing. You're inspirational, you both of you. It's like I love your wisdom. You are walking, you are the truth. You are the wisdom of your words. So thank you, Terry. Thank you for all this today. I know a lot of women were tuning in for this information, and I know you helped so many of us for what's coming up down the road for all of us. And thank you. Terry Cochran, healingpaths.com, Terry Cochran on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you again, everybody. God bless
you. Thank
you, Terry. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.